Hello there. Just a thought. As we're getting closer to the holiday and gift buying season, keep in mind soccer90.com. It is a great place to shop for any type of gear for all your favorite clubs and teams from all over the world. Looking for a messy PSG jersey? A Chelsea jersey with Pulisic on the back. How about a Ronaldo Manchester United jersey? Got it. Soccer90.com has shirts and gear from clubs and national teams from all over the world. And if you happen to be up by Frisco, go check out the actual Soccer 90 store at Toyota Stadium right next to the Hall of Fame. It's a great place to visit and see all this stuff in person. And please don't forget, when you're done shopping at checkout, use the code KICKAROUND to get 25% off your order. Go check it out, soccer90.com.
Get sproutfunding.com and Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310 The Ticket. It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is the Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, two guys who always have their transfer windows open, Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
Lucho Hernandez couldn't keep it. Firmino, Salah, he wouldn't do it again, would he? Mo Salah has! Deja vu all over again. He twists a new set of blood. The man is ripping it out of defenses up and down the land. You just do not keep up with those dancing feet. Watford all a blur. And Salah has repeated the trick of a fortnight ago. He is just too good.
Adeho, P1s. Welcome to the Kick Around. Saturdays here, 2 to 4 on Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310 The Ticket, where you, the good P1, sits around, talks some soccer, and all that implies. By the way, you can also find us now over on our new website, thekickaround.com. www. For those new here or unfamiliar, hi, my name is Peter. Good to speak with you. And here is my soccer-talking BFF, and man reportedly written a private email to John Henry offering up the entirety of his portfolio to re-sign Mo Salah, the amazing Andy Swift.
Man, what a goal.
What a goal.
Thank you for choosing that as the goal call of the day. Travis, I don't know if that was you.
Definitely me.
Yeah, definitely Travis, and clearly the difference when Sam Hale is not
here. Oh, yeah,
here.
Sam would like... He wouldn't even know Liverpool had played and won.
Well, unlike Sam, Travis gets up at 6 a.m. to watch the games.
You're dang right.
Great. Now, where is Sam today? Tongue surgery? Is that what I heard?
Elsewhere.
Oh.
It was a surgery. I don't know if he wants us to disclose what kind.
Oh, sorry.
It may be a little personal for him, you know?
Maybe.
Pants surgery.
Controversial.
Pants,
you know?
Surgery, yes. Wow. Well, all of our best wishes and condolences and thoughts and prayers to Sam Hale, who is missing today. But we have our old workhorse here in the house, Travis. Hello, Travis.
Hey, guys. I'm happy to be back on soccer.
We get some Soroy shine on the show today because of that.
Has Travis done the wheel?
No, Travis has a team.
That's right. I chose on your, I announced my allegiance on your show.
Yeah, that's right, because your boss roots for that team.
That's right. Go Hammers. Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. It is October the 16th. We were last doing a live Kick Around show back in a month called September.
God,
it's been that long because SMU football has been getting in the way and pushing us away from the water cooler and drinking all the water.
The undefeated Mustangs, by the way.
Yeah, I know. They probably deserve it. So we haven't been able to do this. Now, in the meantime, we have done a few podcast episodes trying to keep up with stuff. You can find those over on the website, thekickaround.com, and subscribe on your favorite pod player, blah, blah, blah. But we will cover lots of stuff that we've missed in the last few weeks, including trying to catch up with what's going on in Champions League, European World Cup qualification. Tyler Kern's going to check in, and we're going to talk about the U.S. men's national team, recent run of games.
Is our local boy doing well with that team?
Yeah,
Peter?
We'll ask that question. We'll talk about some Bundesliga with Tyler. We will, and I know this will upset Sam, and I apologize, but we got to get this out of the way. We will review season 2 of Ted Lasso before the end of the day today. Yes, It is Danny Rojas. It is.
Does it make you laugh just hearing him just say that in whatever context?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is very good. And then we're going to start off by catching up on what happened today in the Premier League. And I really wanted to start with the amazing Mo Salah goal, but Andy threw me up against the wall, put his forearm against my throat and said, "No, Peter, we shall talk Leicester 4, Manchester United dose."
So when it was all said and done, you didn't think football was life much, did you, at the end of that one?
I will never, ever give up on the sport of football, Andy.
You know, I'm a little disappointed in you because when it was when it was 3-2, Leicester had just scored their third after Man United had tied it.
Mm-hmm.
I texted you right then and there.
And you wrote a really jerky thing.
No, I didn't. I said, "What?
That's
a game."
Yeah. You said that to a person who clearly is in dire straits over his team.
30 seconds to a minute later, the announcer said, "What a game." So I feel vindicated that. So I'm disappointed because
is not my friend. You, on the other hand, are quote unquote my soccer talking BFF.
I'm also
and you should be more
Liverpool
sensitive.
Supporter. I'm just kind of disappointed you didn't find this to be a great, exciting end-to-end game. Liverpool tied Brentford 2 weeks ago, and I thought it was a great game.
That's because you don't really have hardcore allegiances. You are the soccer gigolo.
No, come on.
Whatever floats your boat.
If it's a good game, it's a good game. Today's was a good game.
No.
Except for your defense.
This was not...
Your defense was not good.
This was not a good game for Manchester United people today. I will say this. I went into the day predicting that they would lose. I thought Leicester was going to win 1-0. In fact, I put it in my NBC predicting app, you know, where you try to win $50,000.
Yeah, you didn't tweet it. Okay, so it doesn't count.
I can show it to you. Right. I had no idea 6 goals were coming today because here's why. One, it's the first game back from an international window. And what do we always say about international windows?
Sluggish.
Games, like teams like this, always perform sluggishly, and the games end up being pretty crappy. So 6 goals in a game was highly unexpected.
You didn't think Ronaldo would sneak one in there?
Shut up. You're so cruel.
Come on, man.
No, I did not think Ronaldo was going to score today. Now, you also have to remember, Andy, I went into this game assuming that Harry Maguire was not going to start today because he's been injured. He hadn't been playing. He didn't play for England.
Right.
He'd gotten hurt. Rafael Varane got hurt for France, and he was out. So I thought it was going to be the dynamic duo of Victor Lindelof and Eric Bailly at center back.
And you still thought they'd only allow one goal.
I did think it would be because David De Gea has been playing out of his mind, and I thought maybe it would stay. And it's not, hey, look, it's not like Leicester's been playing balls out for the last
exactly
3 or 4 weeks.
So it had you changed your prediction if you'd known Maguire was going to start? Would you have said 3-0? No,
probably not. No,
no, of course not.
In retrospect, and even beforehand, I thought it was an odd decision to start him today, considering he hasn't been playing and he had only been through one training session. And that is going to continue to be a narrative for the rest, well, until whatever happens against Atalanta Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever night they play them. Because Solskjaer is going to get run for starting Maguire, who had a terrible game.
It was bad.
At his previous, you know, back at the home of his previous club. It was bad news all the way around.
The defense in general was bad, but you know when an important cog like that doesn't play well, it affects everyone.
The whole team is bad. It United currently looks like it's 3 different teams on the field, and there's no cohesion, no connection between those 3 parts. And if you just take the Solskjaer issue and manager issue and set it aside for a minute. To me, the United thing breaks down into 3 main problems. And the first problem is the holding mid problem. The second problem is the Pogba problem. And the third problem is the Ronaldo problem. Right. So the first problem, holding mid.
Yeah.
We've been saying forever, and I'm like the last. There's 1,000 people more scholarly about Manchester United that have all been screaming, get a proper holding mid for some time. Mm-hmm. It's not McTominay. It's not Fred. It's not Modric. For all different sorts of reasons, right? Yeah, right. Which leads to the Pogba problem.
Yeah.
Well, you can play Pogba deeper like you did today, but you got to put somebody right next to him, like when he plays for France and N'Golo Kante's next to him.
Which is essentially a holding mid that you, the one that you need to get anyway,
right? I mean, yeah. Exactly. Because when you have a proper guy next to him, it allows Paul to do the things he's good at. Unlike today, where you don't have somebody proper next to him, and now suddenly he's being asked to do all the things he's not good at.
Yeah. You can't ask him to play a six. He's an eight.
Correct. And then that last problem, which is the worst and most self-inflicted problem, is the Ronaldo problem.
Okay, we'll stop right
there. And you, of all people, I'm really frustrated with, because you kept insisting to me that this would not make my team worse when everybody kept telling me, and my own little soccer brain kept telling me, oh no, this is going to make things worse, and it has.
I think the only reason it makes your team worse is because it took away from focusing on getting the six that you need. I don't think him on the field makes your team worse.
See, it absolutely 100% creates litany of problems.
Is his fault that Sancho was nothing?
Ronaldo in place then forces Sancho to play out of his natural position. Sancho should be on the right, not the left. And also, Sancho's style of play doesn't work very well with Ronaldo's type of play. And when you also have a guy that refuses to do any sort of pressing, it negatively impacts the pressing the other guys want to do. And that begins a waterfall effect back towards the back end of the half of the field. And look, at the end of the day, the argument about Ronaldo is going to come down to, do all the things he doesn't do that the team really needs get outweighed by his ability to make magic moments and score goals?
Did you like your Champions League win 2 weeks ago? Did you
enjoy
those 3 points?
Yeah, but they were absolute crap up until that point.
And it was him pulling a moment of magic. I'm not a Ronaldo fan. I'm not here defending Ronaldo. But like, who's your coaching idol? Sir Alex Ferguson. I mean, as a United fan. Supporter,
well,
right?
Sure, it'd be, yeah.
And he was a big proponent of signing Ronaldo, right?
Well,
he pushed for it.
Sure.
He's been pushing for it.
Yes.
So does he see, and what potential does he see? I mean, he wouldn't do that if he didn't think there's something there, right, that makes this team better.
Look, at the end of the day, the problem that Ronaldo really creates is that Solskjaer clearly is afraid to take him off the field when he's not having a good game. Today is an example of that, right?
Okay, that's a great point. But then this is another issue. It's not all on Ronaldo, right?
The Ronaldo problem isn't specific to him as a man.
Understand.
It's
that's
larger.
Fair. Okay,
that's
yes.
just a definition of all the different pieces.
Yeah.
It's what he does and does not do on the field, what it means in terms of the time taken away from allowing Mason Greenwood to properly play as the nine on the team.
Yeah, what a goal.
And then what that means in terms of Sancho playing on the right and Rashford playing on the left and all the other things, that problems that creates.
And you'd hope him and Fernandez would have a little bit better connection by now.
Look,
they're not.
At the end of the day, I know everybody's screaming about Ole getting fired and Ole out. But my first question is, who are we going to replace him with at this particular point in time?
Right.
I don't think there's anybody I don't know if there's any transformative person that's available in this moment.
I don't know if Bob Bradley is going to stick around in LA.
And two, I just think there are way too many other problems with this team that I don't know if there's anybody in particular that comes in here and uses this same set of players, because you're going to have to play Ronaldo. That's the problem, right? You have to play Paul Pogba for whatever weird internally generated reasons that are all awful and smell bad that just create too much.
So you're down on your team.
I think this gets worse before it gets better.
And Ole's going to hit the road, you think? I mean, independently of what you think.
He has to.
Yeah.
I just don't know where they go with it.
Yeah.
I don't know how much it... I don't know... And again, I still have no idea who replaces him. You know, I thought Pochettino was in a weird situation at PSG, and maybe that's the deal. They get rid of Ole and stick Michael Carrick or somebody in there as an interim manager and just hope that Pochettino becomes available sooner than later.
You don't think they'll give Ole the winter window?
Well, here's the deal. Have you seen their schedule coming up in the next few weeks?
No, I have not looked.
It's, dude, it is brutal. And it is so brutal that it's one of those situations where you do begin to think, well, if it's going to be like this at Leicester, imagine what it's going to be like next week when they've got to play Liverpool, and they've got Man City coming up, and they've got
Spurs.
They've got Atalanta twice in Champions League. They've got Spurs. Well,
on the road. Yeah, but
right, on the road. Yeah. So their overall schedule in the next...
Oh, Chelsea at the end of November, too.
Yes. It's a brutal schedule.
Yeah, it's not looking good for them.
So...
Are you losing? I mean, we both picked them to finish fourth, top four and fourth. Mm-hmm. Are you still confident they will, or do you think that's kind of slipping away now?
It seems ridiculous to me with all of the talent that's on this field. Somehow, look, that they won't figure out a way to end up in a Champions League position or a European type position. But I also do begin to wonder if internally it starts to fall apart in the locker room.
Well,
and things go really haywire.
They may not make a move. They haven't. Have they hired the president of soccer operations, Woodward? Have they hired his replacement yet? Have they identified who it is? I don't think they have.
Yeah, I always forget what this. I know Woodward is there until the end of the year. I can't remember.
I'm just wondering if they're going to wait till his replacement is in place before they make any kind of decision like that.
Maybe. Who knows, man. It's a bad news. It's a bad deal all the way around. The Ronaldo signing, it creates all sorts of problems. I get it. Somebody made a really good argument that you just couldn't let your crosstown rival pick up your club hero, club legend, and what that would have meant.
Plus all the jerseys they've sold.
Who cares about the jerseys, Andy?
So many jerseys. Well, you know who cares are the stockholders and the owners of this said team. Because ultimately, that's how they run United. They run it like a business.
Hey,
am I right about that?
Yeah. Let me say this. Leicester deserves a lot of credit. They deserve to win that game. If it hadn't been, again, for David De Gea, who I'll mention here in a second before we go. Leicester has really had a rough start to the season. They've been missing some pieces. They really put it together well today, and they totally deserve the game. And I do hope things turn around for them and they get better, because I like Leicester. I like the club. I think Brendan Rodgers is cool. I just, there's a lot of really fun players on that team, and, good luck to them as they continue on. I do want to say this. One of the most underreported stories going on in the sport today is this really weird resurgence of the career of David De Gea, by the way. Because 6-8 months ago, I think we all thought he was done for, and he was going to get sold off to a team in Spain somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And suddenly now he's playing like the old. And then you begin to wonder, what must Dean Henderson be thinking right now?
Mm.
Because he thought he had grabbed the number one spot for Manchester United, and now he probably wants to leave again.
Yeah, right. And I wonder if Ole deserves some credit for that, or somebody within the staff that turned that around.
Maybe. Well, it was not pretty for Manchester United fans today.
Well, they're in fifth. They could drop to sixth if Everton wins.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate
just
that.
Just updating you with the table.
Appreciate
looks like.
That extra note in there, that little extra jab. Yep. You stuck it in there a little deeper. Yes, Leicester 4, Manchester United 2. It wasn't good. Now, we will come back to talk more about the day in the Premier League, but first, we've got a little Champions League and Europa. What is it? What are we calling it now? Is it the Europa Nations League? What was it?
The Conference League.
No, it's the Europa Nations League.
The National League? The one with national teams is Nations League. The third tier club league?
No. Champions League is one thing we're going to talk about. And the last thing was the Nations League final. Is that what it was?
Yeah, national teams.
Right, but it's called the Nation. I'm asking you what it's called.
Nations League.
Okay.
Yes.
This is terrible radio. We will do that coming up next here on The Kick Around.
Check out the Bell Fort Worth Alliance Air Show featuring the U.S. Navy Blue Angels on October 23rd and 24th at Fort Worth Alliance Airport. Head over to the ticket.com contest page now and register to win tickets.
We shall review Ted Lasso Season 2 before the end of the show today. So if you haven't caught up and watched all of them, hurry along. Do that before we get there.
Mm.
Wait, no. That
wouldn't have
bad,
time. And
bad
then,
programming
yes.
decision.
What are you...
Don't tune away from the radio.
What's your deal?
God. I'm stupid. I'm not smart.
Or leave
they
the
can pause
on
the app.
Yeah.
Too many headers, Peter.
Too many. Yes.
No.
Way too many headers.
He doesn't dive in like that. Get stuck in and stuff. He just talks about it.
I'm all talk. All right, so let's see. So we need to catch up on some things.
Yeah, so we have the first two nations to qualify for the World Cup other than the host nation.
I'll give, let's
you
see.
You want to guess?
No, no, hold on. I know them. Okay. I'm going to see. Travis,
okay.
Can you guess the first two nations to qualify for the World Cup in Qatar in 2022?
I'm going to say Germany.
Well done, Travis.
I got one.
Cheating.
Totally not cheating. I have Franz Ferdinand looking at me right now.
All right.
So Germany.
You got that right.
I'm getting the feeling that the S wasn't going to fly, so let's go.
That was a weird way of cheating your way into a right answer.
Yeah, so, not.
You'll never guess the next one.
Definitely not France.
No.
Richardson?
Right. Yes.
It's Richardson.
Right, Danny, it is Richardson.
Grand Prairie.
No, Denmark has now been the second team to qualify.
They've rolled through their group. What we say last time we recapped the qualifiers in Europe a few shows ago, and we just talked about how Denmark was rolling. Well, they're in now, but apparently there's a little controversy.
That's why I didn't get that one.
So
right
don't
away.
Forget that this next World Cup is being held in the nation of Qatar,
mm-hmm.
and there's all sorts of human rights issues, mm-hmm. I think is the best way
right.
to say it.
Yes.
And, you know, they've been hiring all of these migrant workers from North Africa and other countries that are all just essentially peasant mm-hmm. slave types. And,
right. and they bought the World Cup.
Well, yeah, they bought the World Cup. That's like the lesser of the two issues yeah. in general. And then lots of people are dying while they're building all these stadiums.
Right.
Side points.
Yeah. And that has created a situation where some nations, I think Norway is one of them, Iceland's one of them.
I've heard of Norway. I didn't know Iceland. But now apparently Denmark is one.
Denmark, those players and those federations are all very much and very vocal about openly questioning whether or not they'll actually participate in a World Cup played in Qatar. But
so
now that you've qualified, like that seems like something you can easily say if you don't qualify. Well, I didn't want to be there
yeah,
anyway.
Now that you're qualified, it's a different story.
Because you guys are all bad, evil
right.
people.
Right.
But now that you're qualified.
Iceland's not going to qualify. So they're like talking like there's no tomorrow. By the way, we do need to talk about maybe next segment, just mention how Newcastle has a new owner. Because what I was going to say, anybody
yes.
approving that sale and not having an issue with it, cannot speak about the World Cup in Qatar anymore and the human rights issues, right?
Yeah.
You can't have it both ways.
No, we will talk about the new ownership in Newcastle, which is going to be fun to watch over the next few years in a few minutes. But so that's now out of the way. Lots of qualifying is still going on. We'll talk U.S. men's national team in a little bit. But those are the first two official, other than Qatar themselves,
yeah.
Which get in automatically. Yeah. And by the way, that tournament starts at the end of November. It's not a summer tournament. You got to remember, it's yeah. not next summer. It's end of next year.
Yeah, in a year, basically.
It essentially covers the American holiday tradition of Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Right, yes. Those are the bookends a little bit.
They essentially
right.
are. Yeah. Like I think it starts right after Thanksgiving yeah. and it ends just before Christmas.
Are we having a show?
I don't know. We'll find it out. We haven't talked about that yet. So there's that. The next okay. thing is the other event that took place on a national team scale was the European Nations yeah. League final.
They've finally gotten around to playing these,
a tournament that right. started back when I was
a long time ago. When
in
when
college,
you had hair.
It feels like.
Right. So,
so rude.
Italy was one of the semifinalists. Italy and Spain played each other, and Italy finally lost. It had been a gazillion years since they had lost a game. Remember, they didn't qualify for the last World Cup. It seems they haven't lost since then.
Yeah, they were on an incredible streak.
Right. And Spain beat them 2-1.
And they won the Euros.
And they won the Euros, the yeah.
European Championships.
Yeah. And they're the best team in Europe right now, I think. Despite that, Spain beat them 2-1 in the semis. And then Belgium was up 2-0. Against France in the other semi, and France won that game 3-2. This Belgium golden generation just can't win a trophy.
No, they do feel, if you ever have not spent time going and looking at the roster for Belgium over the last few years and just soaking in for a few minutes how they've not won everything, it'll begin to boggle your mind.
Yeah. Is it Martinez? What is it? It's so easy to blame the coach.
It's always my point that it's really hard, that the world is littered with nations that have a ton of footballing talent and they've never won anything.
Yeah.
So just be patient when in your right. anger about yes. the U.S. men's national team.
And then France beat Spain 2-1 in the final. Mbappe had a controversial VAR-approved offside goal. I don't know if you saw it. It went off a defender. Hello, VAR alarm. It hit the defender before it hit Mbappe. And the argument was that because
take it easy, VAR alarm.
Wait, that thing's long.
Because it hit the defender, Mbappe, that was therefore not offside. But the defender was trying to play it because Mbappe wasn't in an offside position. See?
Ah, I see, yes.
Where do you stand on that rule?
I want to talk about that because it came...
It affected today, right? Liverpool.
In the Liverpool game. I want to.
We'll talk about it when Liverpool plays. Anyway,
and then,
so France is the Nations League winner.
All right. Does anybody care?
No.
No.
All right.
Champions League picks back up this week.
Man, a couple storylines that we told you were going to develop. Right, and one of them being this team from Moldova.
So several weeks ago, some guy from Moldova wrote this fascinating Twitter thread, and I'll have to go back and find it and get the kick around Twitter account artificial intelligence to retweet it again.
Did you do a deep dive after that? Because I went and did a deep dive. I started looking into it, YouTube videos. And,
yes,
yeah.
And the whole story about this team called Sheriff,
right?
Which by the way, beat Real Madrid in Spain several weeks ago.
Yes. They're undefeated in their group, first place.
And they're owned by essentially gun-running mafia guys.
Yeah, mobsters.
Eastern European mobsters. It's a fantastic story. And that guy's Twitter thread about the country of Moldova and this spin-off nation called Transpor or something,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, right, which is where they play.
Which is where Sheriff plays. If you haven't paid attention to that, you've got to pick up on that. It is one of the best stories going in sport.
So they've won their first two. They're in first place. They play Inter Milan in Italy Tuesday.
Yes.
So try to catch that game if you can.
By the way, the people that just bought Newcastle United are the same people talking about buying Inter Milan. Just keep that in the back of your mind.
They're going to be the new superpower guy.
And we were talking about the awful fate of one Manchester United. On Wednesday, they do have to host Atalanta for the first of two games they'll play against them.
They got Ronaldo. Ronaldo's money in Champions League, as we saw when they played their match in Villarreal, was it? Is that who they beat 2-1 in the, with the last-minute goal?
Yes.
What about that other team from Spain?
Atletico Madrid is hosting somebody called Liverpool.
Yeah. I would consider this the marquee game of this fixture round, right? Liverpool visiting Madrid, Atletico Madrid. Yes.
I would say so.
Yeah. Travis thinks so. Hey, Peter, what about Barcelona?
Andy. Barcelona. It was funny at the Chick-fil-A that I go to every Monday, because it's Chick-fil-A Monday. That's where it's like I met the guy that works there that has the bruised banana Arsenal tattoo.
Okay.
And every time I go, we have football, soccer talk for a little bit. And this time,
that sounds like fun.
Another employee walks up and he goes, "Hey, this is my friend. I can't remember his name. He's a Barcelona fan." And I actually got to look at him and go, "Oh, I'm sorry."
And he understood what you're talking about.
And he was like, "Yeah, it's been a bad spell for us. Yeah. It's not a good time."
2-3-0 losses in their first two Champions League games. They host Dinamo Kyiv at home on Wednesday. If they don't win that game, and I'm talking if they don't win that game, I think you're going to see a coaching change.
I can't believe there hasn't been one yet. Yep. I think the only reason why they haven't had one yet is because they can't get somebody they really want
in the middle of this mess
to take the gig.
Yeah,
that's really, because I've got all the different group standings, and Barcelona's at the bottom of the table with 0 points. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
The thing about Barcelona is they'll always get in the Champions League no matter how bad they are, because they're always going to finish in the top necessary spots, one of the top four spots in Spain, right?
Yeah.
And so they'll play Champions League, but they're not going to have the Champions League success they've had, at least for the next couple years.
Man City does go to Club Brugge this week on Tuesday, and Chelsea will continue to do their thing as they host Malmo on Wednesday. Yeah. So there's a lot of action happening this week. It's all going on that Paramount Plus thing. Are you enjoying Paramount Plus as a Champions League host?
I watch it on Univision. Sorry.
Of course you do.
Yep.
So that would be
goes
no.
Bragging about his bilingual skills.
You're bragging about the ability that you can stream multiple channels because, you know, you can pay for all these streaming channels.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Not bilingual. Trilingual, Travis.
Three yes. languages.
Ask Andy what languages he's fluent in.
So English and Spanish, obviously.
Texican?
No. So four. He's got four languages.
Portuguese. I can say Ronaldo as like you're supposed to, and then nobody would understand.
Do it.
Ronaldo.
Say it again.
You heard me.
No, one more time.
Ronaldo.
What's the beginning part?
Ronaldo.
Okay, I got it that time. Thank you.
Mark. All right, so there's all your Champions League, Nations League, European qualifying news, all that stuff. When we come back, we'll catch up on the rest of the Premier League action, including that amazing game at Brentford next here on the Kick Around. The U.S. men's national team just completed another three-game window of World Cup qualifying, and we'll recap that with some extra thoughts coming up here in just a little bit on the Kick Around. I'm Peter, he's Andy, and there was lots more Premier League action this morning, and we should start off with a absolutely fun-filled game of soccer that took place at a little tiny stadium that is the home of Brentford, the Bees, as Brentford hosted Chelsea for a London derby.
So if I tell you one team had 17 shots on goal and one team had five, this is Chelsea against Brentford.
The reigning European champions,
right?
Chelsea.
First place EPL, Chelsea.
Brentford, newly promoted, had not played top flight soccer in over 70 years. Prior to this year.
One team had 17 shots on goal. One team had five.
Travis, you'd like to answer that question?
Can you repeat the question?
No.
12 would have been my answer.
That's the answer, 12.
Unbelievable. Obviously, it's Brentford that had the 17 shots. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
So it's crazy, huh?
It was a really... Okay, so when you talk about what a game... Mm-hmm. See, I can now buy into it being
what a game.
Because I was neutral. When it's an exciting game with your own
okay.
team playing poorly,
all right. not so
that's
fun.
Not
I
fun.
I gotcha. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Here's my favorite thing about Brentford, and maybe this is reflective only of the fact that they're unexpectedly playing well, is the home crowd is a joy to listen to in these games mm-hmm. because they are so positively spirited. Mm-hmm. They like totally run smack on the opposing team when mm-hmm. famous players on big clubs come into the place and they do something bad. They run the business
right,
on them.
Yes.
And even when
in good spirits,
in
though,
very good spirit. Yeah, uh-huh, yes. Yeah. It's a very warm and welcoming yeah. feeling about that place. That
and this
makes
is all
me
new
go,
to them too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like being playing in Premier League. And Hey Jude, by the way, at the start of the game, there's like three teams, I think, that have Hey Jude as their theme song, and this is one of them.
Yeah.
Great rendition of Hey Jude before every one of their home games. There's a supercomputer that ran. Did you see this?
No.
That ran, you know, these supercomputers that run, you know, through analytics and predict outcomes. And so the supercomputer ran the results through the end of the season, and they had Chelsea finishing first, Liverpool second, City third, right?
Mm-hmm.
United fifth, West Ham sixth.
Yeah.
Who was fourth?
I'm going to guess Brentford.
Brentford.
What a supercomputer that is.
And so everybody laughed. We all laughed. I tweeted about it. I laughed. And here they played toe-to-toe against Chelsea in a game that it should have been a draw. At least should have been a draw. I think Brentford deserved to tie this
up. The story of the game, in many ways, is Mendy.
He played on his head.
He was amazing. And actually what was really interesting is he played with a level of emotion that I've never seen
right.
him play with today.
I was thinking the same thing.
Like he was getting, like you could tell he even recognized
that
he was playing out of
yeah.
his mind and
yeah.
keeping them in yeah. the game. It was great. It ended up 1-0 Chelsea over Brentford. It was a Ben Chilwell goal just before the
yeah.
start of halftime.
Oh.
A really good goal
yeah.
on his part. And you kind of felt like it was coming. But here's the deal. How many games in a row now has Mr. Lukaku mm-hmm. not scored for Chelsea? I think this is like the fourth or fifth straight game, and he got subbed out.
He did. Now, the goal, in fairness, he was involved in it because it was his presence in the middle. It was a rebound from a shot of his. He does take up a bit of space.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was a shot. I think he had a shot that the keeper saved and rebounded out. Anyway.
Yeah, if you are a person still looking for a team and you don't want to spin the wheel of allegiance because that just seems too risky, and B, you want to do it on your own and hope a club finds you, it might be Brentford. Because that thing is a lot of fun to watch.
That's what I've been saying. You've been telling me I'm a bandwagoner for saying that.
I still am mystified by the Lee Dixon unstableness.
Why?
Because Lee Dixon is a commentator that's always in there with Arlo White for mm-hmm. NBC.
Yeah.
Right? And Lee Dixon is a Arsenal great.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it. Right? Yeah. Like, in any way, shape, and form.
Sure. Yeah.
But he openly talks about his season tickets at Brentford, and it's not like they're
arch rivals.
It just seems weird to me. If you're in the same city,
this is a team that was so far off the Premier League,
But when Arsenal played at Brentford to start the season, and he was commentating on the game.
Weird.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but other than that, you know, I don't know.
All right, now let's move over to the highlight reel of the day, which is, I always talk about how the first set of games after an international window, all the big clubs that have all these international players struggle. Well, Liverpool went to Watford.
What a game, huh? What a game.
And pantsed Watford. This was without question one of the most boring games of soccer I have ever watched. Because
were you and I watching the same game?
From minute one, Watford looked like a team that knew what was going to happen to them, never tried.
And said, please bring
and
it.
And just said, please don't smother us with a pillow or something.
It was a little sad at times.
Let me quantify it this way. I could tell from a distance that Liverpool was playing their backup keeper, but I couldn't figure out who their backup keeper was, and I don't know who the backup keeper was off the top of my head, but because that player never touched the ball until like the 75th minute of the game was the first time they did a close-up that I realized it was Kelleher,
yeah, which the story there is that it wasn't Adrian. I think Kelleher now is the number second. Two, yeah.
I'm 99% sure that it was the 37th minute of the game mm-hmm. before Watford had completed three passes in Liverpool's half of the field.
Wow, really?
Yes. It was well into the 20th minute before they even completed two passes in Liverpool's half of the field. At the 26th minute, they showed the graphic, 85% possession to Liverpool.
Hmm. Well, that was a fine recap. Thanks, Peter. That was, I think we get the picture.
So not only, and here's the problem. I feel bad for Bobby F. because Firmino had a hattie today,
mm-hmm.
and then they were relatively simple tap-in types, but that's all going to get run over by the fact that Mo Salah scored one of the nicest, just completely individual, top-shelf skill goals I've ever seen in this sport.
Well, it rivals the one he scored against City a couple weeks ago, right? And I don't know which one was better. The one against City was pretty
sick as
well.
Because it's City.
Yeah, and it was his right foot. Today he had to cut back to his left foot, although he left the defender in the dust, cutting back.
Well, at the beginning of it, he has three Watford defenders around him in the box, and he soul rolls the ball away from three guys and then pantses the one of those three to get him on the ground and then hit it with his left to the far net.
He is in such a zone now. Like, he is so in the moment over the last 2 months.
He's playing out of his mind.
He is just insane. Now, the pass, the assist he had today.
Yes, to start the scoring.
To me, I don't know if it was more impressive, but like I like assists.
One of the nuanced little things in the game that people, like nerds like you and I, really get excited about, because it's a super hard skill to do, to pass the ball with the outside of your left foot while you're on the run to another player who's behind two defenders
and is also
a good 60 yards away, and to literally just drop it on. I mean, it's like throwing a long bomb to a wide receiver running down the field with three guys around him and just literally lay it in his hands.
It was unbelievable. Now, Mane, 100 goals, no penalty kicks.
That is pretty impressive.
So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so Liverpool rolled today and beat lowly Watford. I don't know if Claudio Ranieri has any chance at Watford. Everybody was already making jokes that he's going to get fired after his first game because today was his first game. So there you go. All right, so after going up 2-0, Aston Villa gave up 3 goals at home to Wolves in the last 10 minutes of the game, and you think, oh, it's just going to end up being a 2-2 draw, which would have been bad enough. But then they gave up a free kick in injury time. It's a deflection off target, and it goes in, and Wolves end up winning 3-2 over Aston Villa.
That was a dumb foul there at the end.
And considering how United played, I kind of wish I'd watched that game instead.
Oh, you didn't watch it on the, what do you call it?
I had goal zone. Yeah. I had red zone going on another screen nearby.
Okay.
Let's see. Norwich hosted Brighton, and I have a feeling that the Canaries have caught Brighton's can't-score virus from last season. But if you haven't seen the highlights, if you're a fan of the U.S. men's national team, the reason to watch this was...
Or not watch,
is because Josh Sargent, who, by the way, don't forget, is actually playing for Norwich now and got a start today, the Brighton goalkeeper comes out on a ball outside the box and misses it and leaves Josh alone. In on goal at the top of the box, all he has to do is slot it in, and he kind of like hits it with his Kleenex, and he hits it so softly, a Brighton defender is able to chase it down and clear it. And to your point, Andy, even if the Brighton player hadn't been there, I don't think it had enough power on it to get in the goal in the first place.
That was the weakest shot on an empty net I've ever seen in my life.
Really embarrassing for Josh. Terrible, terrible. And then Timu Pukki had his own embarrassing moment. He should have scored it near post later in the game. And Josh actually had the audacity to come over and pat him on the shoulder.
Like, no, you feel, bud.
Yeah.
At least Timu Pukki's. Didn't the keeper get a finger on it or something? I think he did.
Maybe he did. Yeah. Manchester City cruised against Josh's Burnley. Sorry, Josh. Did you watch it?
I watched about through halftime.
That's probably
and then I had
needed.
To start getting ready for work.
Oh, you had to bathe and stuff and brush your teeth?
I had to cleanse
brush your hair.
Myself.
Yeah. Did you get all the lint out of your belly button?
Always.
Okay. And as City went on to win 2-0, Bruno Silva and Kevin De Bruyne with the goals in that one. They didn't look too bothered in the bits and pieces
they
I
didn't
saw.
Look, Burnley had a couple opportunities early, right, Josh? I mean,
they had some opportunities, and I like the new guy that they brought in from France.
Yeah,
like,
he's good.
I can't figure out how to say his name. Everyone seems to say it differently. Cornet is what I keep saying. But he's fast. I like him.
And then the Bielsa hot seat. I don't know if it's hot or not. I just wonder what's going on. Is Leeds lost again today?
Are they gonna get relegated?
I don't know. To Southampton. They're in 17th, just above the Mendoza line, which takes us to the story of one Newcastle United, Andy, which this week they announced the sale to... essentially, Saudi Arabia. Now,
we need a whole segment for
this. We'll talk about it more maybe next week. But the reality is, Newcastle, who by the way hosts Spurs tomorrow at 10:30, which will be interesting. It is without question that what we saw happen to Chelsea and with Man City, and we've seen other clubs come out.
But
with
in
this,
Premier League, that's the PSG is the
yes.
Other one.
But what we are about to see is the emergence of a Newcastle is a legitimately huge club, right? That has just been dormant for a while.
The smart
but
purchase.
But now with all this money behind it, and this what is this team going to look like in 1 year's time, in 2 years' time? And suddenly now you can see like that whole interview with Jurgen Klopp the other day, just kind of talking about how this happens and why this shouldn't be happening. You can just tell he's frustrated. Now they've got somebody else they're going to have to deal with at the top of the table. Because make no mistake, there's no way the nation state of Saudi Arabia, whether it's them or some sort of de facto weirdo side company spinoff thing, is going to allow this not to at least become super competitive.
Oh, yeah. No, they're going to start spending. They got to save them from relegation. They start spending this window.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be fast.
Because that's
and
their
furious.
Problem, right? Like, yes. They bought this thing in Newcastle so bad right now, and they are sitting in the relegate. But now they'll make a coaching change, at least an interim coaching change. They'll buy some players available and make it a better team just enough to keep them up.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then next summer, they're going to go.
Have you been kind of like keeping a list of all of the players they're talking about buying?
Yeah, there's a thread on Twitter like doing that for us. It's funny. There's an account.
The new one today was Pogba.
Pogba, nice.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Like now Newcastle's going to buy Pogba.
There's some crazy ones listed.
You can have him.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll talk more about this. But, you know, all those that are turning a blind eye now, all those in executive positions that are turning a blind eye or don't have an issue with this purchase cannot say anything more about
Cutter.
And a lot of those that were complaining about Cutter are now suddenly very silent about this.
Mike, the easy part of that is if you're complaining about it now, where have you been in relations to Man City or PSG?
Right.
Right. Or even to some weird degree, Chelsea, because Abramovich isn't exactly, you know, I mean, he's not a nation state, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lesser evil, I think, than the other ones. But my point is, hey, look, this is how things are. And we're just going to have to roll with things, and you know.
Right.
Because if you're going to.
Hell,
you're gonna,
for that matter, the Glazers.
If you're going to point, You know you can't pick and choose who you're gonna point fingers at.
No, hey, you know what? It'll give us something a lot of fun to talk about on the kick around for the next few seasons. Mm. So at the end of the day, Chelsea ends up at the top of the table. They stay there with 19 points. Liverpool's right behind them with 18. Man City in third, owning it by themselves with 17. And look who is in fourth place after their draw against Norwich today. The Seagulls. Brighton is in fourth with 15th. United in fifth. Everton, who do play tomorrow, is in sixth. They play West Ham in the morning. Brentford seventh. Wolves eight. And then Spurs, again, who go to Newcastle, are in ninth. And West Ham is in 10th place. And down at the bottom, Norwich, Burnley, and Newcastle in that reverse order. All right. When we come back, the good Tyler Kern will join us for a little U.S. men's national team chit chat next year on the Kick Around. Welcome back to the Kick Around. Typically Saturdays 2-4 here on the Sport Radio Ticket. This is the first time back in several weeks because SMU football has been juggernauting its way onto Saturday afternoon radio. Are we back on again next week? Do we actually get 2 weeks in a row?
Yeah.
Yeah? Josh, do you know?
I believe that is the case, yes.
Excellent. Excellent. We love that. All right, now, Wednesday night, after the USA game against Costa Rica, Andy and I did record a very special edition of the Kick Around podcast style, kind of recapping our thoughts after the three-game window, and you can find that on our website, thekickaround.com, or subscribing to it as your favorite pod player, whatever you want to do. But I do think for those who have not listened to that, and now that we've had a few days to kind of digest and think more about it, and I wanted to bring in another voice and opinion about all of this, we will discuss the national team with our friend, the amazingly cool Tyler Kern. Come in, Tyler.
Hello, boys. Good to talk to y'all. It's been a while.
Are you in a bathroom?
No.
Are you pottying with us on the radio?
You're in a closet?
Why is that echoing?
Are you in a water
Tyler,
closet?
Did you... Did you have Mexican food last night? All right.
Yes. Yes. I live in Texas. What do you want?
All right. Tex-Mex is good, right?
Yes, I love it. I love it.
Good going in?
Sorry, I'm in the bathroom.
Maybe not good going out. No worries, Tyler. We love that you're with us. We're going to have Tyler on for a couple of segments. He's going to do his typical Bundesliga talk here in a little bit. All right, Tyler, my first question for you related to this three-game window. Did anybody on either side of the Berhalter fence have any reason after this three-game windows to consider shifting to the other side of the Berhalter fence?
I kind of don't think so, right? I think that if you went in and you were negative about Berhalter, that abysmal Panama game in the middle of the two wins gave you enough reason to probably stick to that side. And if you came in and you were relatively positive about Berhalter going in, then you probably leave and say, oh, the U.S. is second out of the eight teams trying to qualify out of CONCACAF. You know, they won a couple home matches. I'm still positive about Berhalter. So I don't think it gave anybody any reason to switch whatever side of the fence they're on, because there were enough positives for the positive side and negatives for the negative side that everyone just stays firmly planted where they are.
Andy, I was watching the new Dave Chappelle special on Netflix, and he has this very funny line that's one of my favorite new things, which is, I don't believe in Twitter because I don't believe Twitter is a real space. But that said, do you think that the general negativity about Berhalter that you see on social media is reflective of the real general sense about Berhalter's position as the national team coach? Like, do you think in reality the large percentage of national team fans are anti-Greg Berhalter?
Of the hardcore fans?
Of just the general fan base in real life, not on social media, but in the real world. Do you think it's 50-50?
I think hardcore fans is probably 50-50 because they get more nuts and bolts and dive deeper. I think that just the general fan probably is not as in tune with who the coach is and is just following the team and making sure that it wins the games it needs to win.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think I don't...
Yeah, I don't know. I do think I get infected by the social media coloring in general.
Where do you stand on it, Peter? Why don't you give us your thoughts on Berhalter?
I think Greg Berhalter, for all of, well, there's two things. One, I think in general he still is overcomplicating things. Like, if I think about somebody else coming in and taking his place, what would they do to make this team better? I think they would simplify. I think they would try to figure out how you take a group of guys that are only playing together in very short spates of time, and how do you get them to play their best, which is get them to play simple systems they're all familiar with that maximize the roster that you have. And I don't think Berhalter does that. I think he's so fascinated by modern soccer that he overcomplicates it.
And Tyler, on the pod, we talked about this on the podcast that we recorded right after the game. And what I said was the overcomplicating issue is especially pronounced when you are having to rotate like you're having to do when you play three games in 7-8 days.
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do, because all of a sudden you're trying to play the exact same style with different personnel, and I don't necessarily think that the style he wants to play fits the personnel that the U.S. men have to begin with, but then when you start rotating and all of a sudden you say, okay, we can't play Tyler Adams, you know, 180 minutes over the course of a week and then send him back to his club team because then he's going to get hurt and he's not going to be around for November. So then you have to rotate key players out, and then you have performances like what you have against Panama. So yeah, I think it's overcomplicated. Then you move pieces around and all of a sudden a player who you would expect to be in this spot all of a sudden isn't in that spot, and you look disjointed in the final third, which I think has been probably the biggest knock against this team through the first two windows of qualifying. And so, yeah, and when you think about the fact that it really came down, at least from what I've heard, Berhalter against Oscar Perea for who was going to get the U.S. men's national team job. And when you think about what Oscar does particularly well, I think people who follow FC Dallas can probably attest to this as well, that Oscar does a really good job of putting players in positions to succeed based on what their strengths are, and not playing an idealistic style, but being a real pragmatist about, okay, these are the players I have, this is what they're good at, how do I maximize that? And that it makes me a little wistful for what it could have been if Oscar was in charge of this team. But I understand why the U.S. went with Greg Berhalter. There are just times where it's a little maddening, because I think Peter's right. I think oftentimes it is overcomplicating things, and he wants to play Pep Guardiola ball or Thomas Tuchel ball, you know, and play like the best club teams in the world, and I just don't always think that that's realistic.
All right. Now, I keep bringing this up because I still feel like this isn't discussed enough, or maybe I'm not listening or reading the right places, or maybe I'm making way too much out of something that isn't really all that significant. But in the entirety of Berhalter's time as manager of this team, he has yet to be able to field the golden quad of Christian Pulisic, Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, and Giovanni Reyna at the same time. They have not played on the field in this national team yet, period, the end. And am I making too much out of that, Tyler?
I think that matters because they're all talented players, right? And so, like, there's there's something to that, not being able to field those guys. And so you're asking the next man up. And we say, okay, the U.S. is quite a deep team, and that's nice. You know, you've got guys like Timothy Weah and Brendan Aaronson.
Until you see the Panama game.
Yeah, until you see the Panama game. That's a great point. It's depth at certain spots and then no depth at other spots, right? Like, no depth at the six.
Yeah.
And you have to have Tyler Adams. But if Christian Pulisic is out, you say Brendan Aaronson can do a job for you. Timothy Weah can do a job for you. But if Tyler Adams is out, if, you know, a couple other midfielders are out, if you lose, like, a Weston McKennie and a Tyler Adams, all of a sudden your midfield looks real light.
Yeah.
And real bad. So I think when it comes to having that quad... what do you want to call it? A quadrant of good players, the golden four, we can call them, or something like that. I do think there's something to that, because they're all talented players in their own right, and they are thought of in highly thought of terms for a good reason, right? Because they are talented, they play for some of the best clubs in the world. So it's frustrating that those guys have never been on the field together at the same time, and you'd like to think that it's at some point the stars would align to allow all four of those guys in a game. You'd like to think that it'd be Mexico in the next window.
So, Peter, if you talk about those four guys, if you had Reyna, Pulisic, and McKennie without Adams, or Adams on the field without the other three, when are you in best shape if you're the U.S. national team? And I would argue almost that you need Adams more than the other three at the same time.
Oh, I completely agree. Yeah. I've been saying and trumpeting this for a while, that Tyler Adams is the most important. Like, not only is he the most important, he's probably the most important first, second, and maybe even third player on the team in many ways. He's so critical to the success of this team because he allows so many other things to happen, plus he's just so damn good.
But we shouldn't be in a spot where, like, one player like that weighs so much.
No, but...
You know, if you're the national team.
Yeah, but that happens to a lot of national teams.
Yeah, I would argue...
Like Portugal without Ronaldo.
If you take Jorginho off of Italy, are they the same team? Probably not, right? Like, players that play in those midfield type positions, you kind of build your team around them. If you take Conte off of France, are they the same team? Probably not. And so good players are valuable, as it turns out. And the U.S. just, for a long time, I think the sum was greater than the parts that you kind of put together. You kind of looked at what the U.S. is able to accomplish with, you know, a collective group, and you said, man, I don't know that there are any superstars, but the U.S. is good. Now they have all of these kind of outstanding players, and you kind of look at what it looks like once you put it all together and think, maybe we should be better. But I think a Tyler Adams is absolutely crucial to what they're trying to
do. All right, we're short on time, but I do have to ask this question before we quit talking about this. The U.S. next plays in Cincinnati against Mexico on November the 12th. Question, Andy, you first. Does Ricardo Pepi start at striker?
Yes.
On the 12th?
Hands down, yes. Who is ahead of him in the chart at the number 9 right now?
Stand by. I'll answer that in a second. Okay. I'm asking, Tyler, do you think he starts on the 12th? I mean, assuming this form kind of continues where it is now and nothing happens to him or other options.
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
I think he's top of the depth chart. Yep.
There's been a lot of talking going on in soccer nerd circles about whether or not he's the right man for this job with a Gio on one side and Pulisic on the other, because the way they play, and is he the right player to play with them versus a Giassi Zardes, who probably does move better and play tactically smarter and more mature than Pepi.
Are you talking
does.
About holding the ball,
holding
coming
play,
back,
yeah. making runs into the box? Mm-hmm. Pepi's a way better finisher, and maybe that, like, which part is more important? Mm-hmm. But which team makes the team more difficult to play against? And I do think that's a fun conversation to have. Go ahead.
There's a really good newsletter that John Mueller writes.
Space. Yes.
Yeah, and he talked about how he thought Giassi Zardes had a better game in the game where Ricardo Pepi scored 2 goals against Jamaica. He thought Giassi Zardes came in and played better than Ricardo Pepi because of the things that you're talking about, right, Peter? It's the movement.
That's where Peter gets his info, by the way, Tyler, just so you know.
I just keep repeating everything John Mueller says.
But it's an interesting point, right? But at a certain point, Giassi Zardes had a ball crossed right across the face of goal that he just couldn't sort his feet out. It goes, I think, between his legs. He doesn't end up finishing the chance. And at a certain point, you could talk about all the fantastic stuff that a striker can do, you know, between the 18-yard boxes. But at the end of the day, sometimes you just need someone, especially at the international level, that just finishes off dirty half chances.
And
Ricardo Pepi does that.
Right. And you're either a finisher or you're not. and Pepe's a finisher. The other stuff, you learn. You learn by playing.
Right.
And but you can be taught that.
Is the World Cup qualifying process the right place to be learning?
Yeah, right, no.
Right? Is that where you should be teaching kids to be doing
Fair point.
Yeah, so, hey, look, 6 points out of the window is not bad. The U.S. sits in second place. It's not all gloom and doom. Yes, I know Greg still has the job for all of you that hate him, but it is what it is. We'll catch back up with them here in a few weeks. Like I said, Mexico in Cincinnati on November the 12th. It should be a good time. All right, when we come back, Tyler's going to stick around, and we're going to talk a little Bundesliga next on The Kick Around.
And great food. For information or tickets for Fort Worth Beer Feast, go to saucerbeerfeast.com. You must be 21 years or older to enter and win. Kick around.
That's a professional liner reading by
Thank
Travis.
You.
I went to winter at the beer feast.
Winter at the beer feast.
Okay.
I just read what's on the paper, man.
I hear you, man. You can understand why some of us are confused.
Thanks for taking this one for the team, man.
You're welcome, man.
Hey, our review of Ted Lasso Season 2 is coming up here in a little bit. Before we do that, though, I feel like now's a good time to continue speaking with our good friend live via the internet from a closet in his house, Tyler Kern.
The water closet.
The water closet.
It's the water closet.
It is the... Has your wife forced you to put your little studio set up somewhere totally inconvenient and uncomfortable in your house?
No, it's we are renovating our house right now, so we moved in with my brother and sister-in-law for a little bit. So
they send you to the WC to do your radio bit.
Yeah,
oh, nice.
Yeah, they're like, you're talking to the Kick Around guys? Go to the bathroom.
Yeah, that's what
so
they
I'm sitting
deserve.
In the shower right now.
Nice. I'm looking at all of the Bundesliga scores today, Tyler, and I'm spying a performance from one E. Alland as Dortmund beat Mons 3-1 today.
Big game for Erling Haaland. Two more goals. And, yeah, big win for Borussia Dortmund as they go top of the table. You know, it's been a couple weeks since we've talked Bundesliga. And actually, before the international break, Bayern Munich lost to Eintracht Frankfurt. And that kind of opened the door for some other teams to hop up a little bit. Now, Bayern doesn't play until tomorrow. They're 2 points back of Dortmund right now. But it's nice to see things a little bit tighter at the top of the Bundesliga for a change, you know? So Dortmund go top after that 3-1 win today. Like I said, two more goals from Haaland, but the second one was really all Jude Bellingham, who is an outrageously good player, and I'm really angry that he's British and not something else.
American?
Yes, I would love for him to be American. That kid is incredible. I think he's just 17.
Just a kid.
But he rushes a defender for Mainz, forces a turnover, plays a beautiful ball into the middle to Haaland, who's wide open, and Haaland does what he does and buries it. So 3-1 win for Dortmund today, which was huge. And then Bayern Munich play Bayer Leverkusen tomorrow in a really big game, because Leverkusen has come out of the gates really, really hot this season and playing well. They have an 18-year-old who is a superstar. If you haven't heard his name, Florian Wirtz. He leads the league. He leads the Bundesliga in goals and assists per 90, and is second in shot creating actions. And so this is a guy that that can kind of do it all from that kind of number 10 playmaker role just beneath the striker. That's going to be a fun game tomorrow.
And then let's see. So let's look through the list of people who play over there, because for the United States, because Chris Richards, formerly of FC Dallas, that was sold to Bayern Munich, and I believe is still on loan at. His deal at Hoffenheim is still a loan, correct?
Yeah, it's still a loan. He's still owned by Bayern Munich.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, so think this. He plays in Columbus on Wednesday night, has to hop a flight back to Germany, and then plays for Hoffenheim on Friday in their 5-0 win.
Pretty incredible little 48 hours for him, right?
That's
playing
amazing.
Playing for the U.S. men's national team, getting a win, and then a big 5-0 win for Hoffenheim yesterday. So, yeah, nice little stretch for Chris Richards. And, you know, John Brooks also played today for Wolfsburg, and they lost 2-0 to my Union Berlin. And,
ours.
Ours, yeah. To everyone's. To the P1s.
It's the Kick Around.
The Kick Around's FC Union Berlin.
Who's in fifth place in the
Yes,
Bundesliga,
you know
by
it.
Yes, yes. We're all aboard the
Union train.
There we go. Europa League 2022. Just look out. So all I'm saying is that Chris Richards, there's a door open with the U.S. men's national team where there hasn't really been. Everyone just kind of assumed for a very long time that that was John Brooks's spot. And with Miles Robinson locking down the right center back spot, it kind of looks like the left center back position for the U.S. men's national team is slightly open. Wolfsburg have lost three in a row. John Brooks hasn't looked good for club or country in the last few weeks. I mean, he was injured, which is why he wasn't called into this camp in the first place. But I think there's a strong argument to be made that that someone else could supplant John Brooks there. And if Chris Richards keeps playing well and keeps playing at a high level for Hoffenheim, I don't see why it couldn't be him.
Hey, speaking of Americans in Germany and Wolfsburg, that's one of the clubs really rumored to be interested in Ricardo Pepi. So what are your feelings about where Pepi should end up? Like a team like Wolfsburg, or if he has a chance to play in the Premier League for a club, mid-table club, that would give him decent minutes. Would that be a better destination?
Does a mid-table club exist in the Premier League that would give an 18, 19-year-old striker minutes? That's my only question, is that in the, I feel like the Premier League is a terrible place to go for Americans to get minutes and to get development. I don't love Wolfsburg either, necessarily, but I think the Bundesliga is a more fertile training ground for young players, specifically Americans. But we, there's just not the track record of young players going to the Premier League for out of Major League Soccer to make me feel confident about that. Right?
Yeah, the only club that I think that makes any sense whatsoever, and then I realize it's the Jozy Altidore story, which is Southampton.
Yeah, but they're about to get relegated too.
Well, maybe, maybe not. Yeah. Who knows? That would be one. You're asking about mid table teams.
Yeah. Villa would,
Villa
be,
would be one. Yeah. Palace, but they've got a bunch of guys that, you know, they're trying to stick up there.
Yeah,
I don't.
Well, Wolfsburg's one of the big rumors right now for Pepi, so we'll see. A lot will happen before something happens. But
Wolfsburg's a big rumor. You know what? As crazy as it sounds, I wouldn't hate him going to Bayern Munich for a couple of reasons. You sit behind the greatest striker in the world right now, in Robert Lewandowski, which is fine with me, with it being Ricardo Pepi. But Bayern Munich have had a hard time keeping and retaining guys that are, you know, backup caliber strikers, because no one wants to go and sit behind a guy like Robert Lewandowski. But if you can go and get spot minutes and learn from that guy, I actually don't think that that's the worst spot in the world. It's whether or not he would actually get those kind of mop-up backup minutes. But, I mean, I think that there's an opportunity there because Bayern have had a hard time kind of finding that backup type guy.
Take a quick second and check ourselves on the Ricardo Pepi hype train just a little bit, please? Because as much as I love that kid, and as good as I think, and as much potential as he does, I'm 99% sure somewhere in a closet or a shelf or a drawer in the Bayern Munich offices, they've got a striker that can play at a higher level than Ricardo Pepi at the age of 18 at this particular moment in time. They just absolutely have to.
They roll out as a backup Eric Choupo-Moting.
Okay.
So, you could say Choupo-Moting's a better striker right now than Ricardo Pepi, but how long do you hold on to a guy like that? You know, will he want? Would Choupo-Moting rather go start at Southampton? So
part of the reason why this came up was that the rumor was when the Premier League rumor that there's a mid-table Premier League club shopping for him, and the number was between 12 and 15, and then people are like, well, maybe they should be selling him for 20. If you really sit down and do the research and find out the type of players that are at market priced between $15 and $22 million American dollars that are 17 to 22 years old, it's a pretty impressive list of players that you could buy in that price range that I think are probably better, more experienced players than Ricardo Pepi at this moment in time. I wonder if we're all getting a little bit ahead of ourselves on the Pepi situation when it comes to what his value is or what clubs should be buying him to start in their particular league of choice.
What's your ideal landing spot for him, Peter? Like when you think about, okay, what level he is right now, somewhere he could get minutes, a place that is a good spot. What's the ideal spot?
Man, for me, it is one of the better Eredivisie, you know, one of the Dutch teams. I think, you know, a team in like Salzburg or somebody like that.
I think the Dutch league myself.
Yeah, just somewhere where he isn't under pressure to perform a ton, you know, to. It just where the spotlight goes off of him for a while, hell, or even, and I know this is never going to happen, a big club buying him and letting him stay in Dallas, right? And just play every week in and out for Dallas and being the guy. I think benefits him better than some of these other situations. But man, dollars are being floated around and opportunity, and you know, I worry. But he's I am in the camp that he's gone in January. There's no way he's, unless he gets loaned back, there's no way he doesn't get sold in January.
I'm also intrigued by the Serie A teams, and Daniel can probably speak to this. Daniel Robertson can do a better job speaking to this than me, but AC Milan is really intriguing to me as another spot. I know I'm going back to the big teams because I've got stars in my eyes on
Ricardo. You don't want him to go to Pepe, Venezia?
But no, please, no more Venezia players. I would rather not see that. But the opportunity to kind of maybe play some spot minutes behind Giroud and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, I don't know. AC Milan's doing a great job playing some young players, and they play a really exciting brand of soccer. So I don't know. That would be fun. But yeah, I know. I'm thinking too big when it comes to Ricardo Pepi, but I can't help it. I'm so dang excited, guys.
Our little soccer brain full of fun, Tyler Kern. Thank you, Tyler. Thanks for joining us to talk U.S. men's national team in the Bundesliga.
Das Bundesliga. Thanks for having me, guys. It's always fun.
We'll talk to him next week. When we come back, we will review season 2 of Ted Lasso next year on the Kick Around. Don't forget to visit our goofy little new website, thekickaround.com, where you can find your Kick Around t-shirts and jersey swag stuff from our friends at eSports, along with the upcoming show we're going to talk about. They've got their jerseys with the correct sponsorship on the front. Yes, Ted Lasso jerseys, both home and away. You can get them name and numbered and all that stuff. And you can check all that stuff out at thekickaround.com. All right, this is the final segment of the day, and it is now time to review. Andy, I feel like we just don't get enough credit for being the originators, the original drivers of the bandwagon of Ted Lasso on the Ticket.
Okay. We mentioned it first. I don't know if we were the original drivers of the... Were we?
Yes. Who else on the Ticket was talking Ted Lasso before us?
We held
us.
The torch.
Thank you.
You guys definitely promoted it months before someone like Bob picked up on it.
Feels a little cheap, though, right? You are the soccer show of record on the station. You should be on the front lines of any soccer media coming
through. That's really a soccer show, though.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I haven't seen it, so I don't know. But it is about soccer, right?
No, not at all. It's not about soccer.
Especially season 2.
Soccer's the backdrop.
Not about soccer, but it is soccer involved.
All right, Andy. I wanted you and I to discuss season 2 here because it is now complete. We waited forever, what seems like forever, for another season of the most surprising show to come across our televisions. In some time. At the end of season 1, we were like, oh my God, how in the world did this turn out to be a good television show? And it did.
Yes.
And now season 2 is done.
Right.
The episodes, all 12 episodes, even the 2 throwaway episodes.
All have been watched.
Yep.
Right.
How many thumbs up, down, or sideways did you give season 2 of Ted Lasso?
It is so weird because season 1 was an uplifting story, right, in the middle of the pandemic, and I think that's kind of what lent itself to be such a liked show. Season 2 was a little bit darker, which in a way makes it a little bit more appealing, but less soccer. So I think where I stand on this is that there were more highs for me in the likability scale, season 2.
Mm-hmm.
There are also more lows. Season 1 was more consistent in terms of how much I liked it.
Right.
Season 2 was a little bit more of a roller coaster episode to episode, where there were some shows that I really, really liked, a lot more than season 2, and some that I thought, this was okay.
So let me ask this part of the question, because as I said, there were 12 episodes. Originally, they had agreed to do 10,
right.
And then Apple said, hey, mm-hmm. we need 12 episodes.
Money.
And so they agreed, mm-hmm. but they did those 2 episodes as kind of like spin-off, unrelated episodes.
Standalone
episodes, and I think those are the 2 that you felt like brought the show down versus the other ones that you felt were good?
Well, a lot of people pan the Christmas episode, but I happen to like it. So, and then the Beard show, the one
Coach
that was
Beards,
the really introspective show about Coach Beard, I thought was okay, but it wasn't one of my favorites.
Okay.
Because it didn't add to the storyline.
I was going to say, I kind of felt that way too. Like, I think the Christmas one is one of the best episodes of the series. It's just so, like, a Christmas episode in July, and they nailed it.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
That Beard episode, like, it was an interesting look at his life, but, like...
it didn't fit.
I didn't feel as invested in that episode as most of the others.
Yeah. Okay. So I feel like to do this justice in the limited amount of time, I want to cover the four kind of storyline topics that I think they tried to accomplish there. First off, the fate of the team on the field. The thing that really gets kind of thrown away in many ways, which is all the actual football action.
Right.
Is what would happen to the team after getting relegated last year? Would they get promoted or would they stay in the championship? We find out at the end of the season, spoiler alert, that they... And by the way, this got spoiled for me in the days leading up to the episode.
Oh, no!
Because the news came out that Apple and the Ted Lasso producers had cut a deal with the Premier League for $500,000 for them to be able to start using Premier League logos and all the other kind of accoutrements to make the show more realistic.
And I wonder, because they depended on soccer a lot less season two, and I think it's one of the things that bothered you, that we kind of lost track of how the team was doing. When we were reviewing midway through the season, that's one of the things you pointed out. And I wonder if it's because they had actually tried to engage in these, they were probably conversations with the Premier League, and didn't reach an agreement, and so they couldn't do it.
Right, so maybe they didn't decide that they would ultimately win
Until they had secured it.
That's actually an interesting theory on your part. So yes, they now have been promoted. All right, so they've through a kind of a callback to the opening of the season where Danny Rojas unfortunately kills the mascot with a bad penalty kick, converts the penalty kick to secure a tie against Brentford.
I know,
interestingly,
crazy,
of all things, to win promotion back to the Premier League for the next season. So I guess were you pleased by that result?
Yes.
Okay.
I was pleased that it was a draw and not they didn't win and that they didn't win the championship, that they finished in second. That was good. But I felt like they could have thrown a little bit more of the soccer results through the season than they did.
Point number two, storyline number two, the emotional state and fragility of one Ted Lasso.
Right. Yes. I think that's a very important storyline because Ted Lasso was all positivity season one, and it was part of why the show was so uplifting, and it's why we loved it. It's like he always has a positive answer about everything, and he's showing us how it's done. And then season two, I think we discover there's a dark side to him, right?
Right.
And we don't quite find out exactly why. We're going to season three.
Well,
but there's some light being shed on
why. I think we do when we find out that his father killed himself. I think that's a pretty key moment in the show.
Yes, but there's a letter that was read. There's a letter that the psychologist wrote to him that he read and reacted to, but we don't know the contents of the letter, and I think that's going to shed some light on it.
All that paid off for you, though? In terms of that part of the storyline?
Yes, because there's a season three.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It paid off because, yes, I can now see how...
My one concern is that they crammed so much into season two that we got way too little of Ted Lasso. Like what?
Because there are too many other storylines.
There are too many other things going on that they took Jason Sudeikis off screen too much and focused on too many other things. And not that those things are bad, but the show is really about him and the comedy behind him. And Sudeikis is so good in that role. I don't think you're doing yourself a favor by taking him off screen as much as they did this
show. Okay, so that's a fair point. I think they had to do that, though, because they had to develop other characters because of the way they're going to wrap everything up season three.
Okay. Next storyline point, the fragility or lack of fragility in the relationship between Keeley and Roy.
Yeah, what about it?
Did you like that storyline? Did you feel like it was forced by kind of throwing out red herrings of people trying to kiss her and admit their love for her?
It felt like the going from A to B or A to D, right? That's fine. I'm fine with the trajectory. I'm not cool with how fast it went there towards the end. A lot of things were sped up and forced because they had to get it in before the season was over.
Okay.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it was a little clumsy along the way.
Clumsy at the end.
And they did such a good job of establishing that this is an amazing relationship. It always felt weird when they threw things in the story to make it sound like it was in danger when it clearly was not in danger.
Yeah, but it is in danger as we find out.
I don't think it is.
I think it's going to
No, I don't think it is. I think it's a rock-solid relationship.
I agree with Andy.
Next.
I think it's in trouble.
Okay, well... We'll let you have your own show and let you do a review. Let's see. So the next storyline is the one between the owner and the player, Sam, and the weirdness of that whole story
Rebecca.
And the fact that the show never, ever really touched on that point.
What do you mean? It didn't touch on the point that it was weird?
Well, the fact that it's the owner of a club in a sexual relationship with a player and how inappropriate that is.
Right. Because they were trying to show something else. The point was that they actually, I don't know if fell in love is the word, but they grew attached because of the brain, right? Because they were communicating through text and they found common ground that way and they just happened to be the owner and the player.
Yes, but were you not at all bothered by the fact that it is in our common world today, if an owner of a club was dating a player on right. a team,
like
that would
me
be
too ish.
It's just yeah. not, you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
And it just was never a threat. Like even just touching on it, I think
right.
would have made it seem more realistic. And
yeah, well, there's a ton of things that I think strayed from realism, right? Like,
right.
Like
there's no way a player is going to leave to go play on a little team in the French league when their team just got promoted to the Premier League.
Right, exactly.
Which is, right?
Well, no, in the African league, you mean, right? Is that what you're talking about?
I thought he was playing on Morocco in the French league.
No, he was going to buy Casablanca.
Oh, Casablanca. You're
yeah,
right. Yes. Okay. Yes.
And build them into a super team.
Yes. Right.
Yes. That a team that is in financial has financial problems, they lose an airline sponsor and it's replaced by a dating app sponsor. Like, that doesn't make sense, right? That, like, oh, everything's fine. You know, we lose the airline sponsor and it's replaced by a dating app sponsor.
Right.
That doesn't make sense. There's a lot of those little things that just don't make sense, but I think suspension of disbelief, maybe you have
so
to.
Those, all right, that leads into the final storyline mm-hmm. of the season, which is the heel turn of Nate.
Yeah. Well, we saw little things here and there coming, right?
Because there's nowhere in the world where the former kit man mm-hmm. turned assistant coach ends up getting a gig as the head coach of West Ham United.
Not if he's the wonder kid, though. Right? If he's the wonder kid. It's happened. Mourinho was a translator.
Yeah, but he went through a lot of iterations and coaching gigs before he got a head coaching gig in a top flight team in a top flight league.
But you also got to think that rich dude, it's Rupert, right?
Yeah.
I still think there's something more he's up to. And this is not like that was not the last step of his plan. Like there's something more to it, I think.
So, but in general, did you buy into the whole thing? This character that we all fell in love with this squishy, lovable, mm-hmm. just sweet guy in season one, mm-hmm. so bizarrely turns into this awful human being in season two. Did you buy that?
Yes, I bought it because you're buying a lot of things that aren't 100% realistic with the show. It's part of the show. It's part of what makes this show charming. You know,
did you hate him for tearing down the belief sign?
Yes, I couldn't stand Nate at the end, which is what they wanted us. They wanted us to feel that way, right? They wanted us to hate him because he's going to turn around and come right back season three.
So do you think at the end of season three, it'll come down to a game where for all the marbles,
yeah, either to win it or not get relegated?
Yeah,
because right?
now they've originally said season three is the final season.
How about to keep West Ham from winning the title? Or how about they beat West Ham and they get relegated? That's it.
Is that
That's
what it
what's going to happen.
I've already spoiled season three, Andy. All right.
So did you end up liking season two or not? I can't.
Yes, I in general did. I did not like it as much as season one.
Yeah.
I think they tried to do too many things.
Right.
But this is all common stuff, and I'm hoping that what they did this time is in preparation to make season three super kick ass.
You know, they've figured out the arc ahead of time. So Jason
Sudeikis.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He's known what the arc has been along.
So that's why I'm hoping that this is, you know, that all the ups and downs of this season will pay off
yeah.
for season three.
Oh,
that's
God.
What
It'll
I'm
be
certainly
wrapped
hoping.
Up in a nice little bow tie.
I'm certainly yeah. hoping that is the case for sure. All right. There is our review of Ted Lasso season two. If you haven't watched it, go check it out over on the Apple TV Plus with your subscription or whatever. Travis.
No.
You're not going to watch it?
No, I'll watch it eventually. I really like Jason Sudeikis. I just haven't really gotten
like, what
to
are
it.
You waiting for?
People to stop talking about it all the time, honestly. Like
Ted Lasso.
Yeah, no, it's just one of those deals where like you hear, especially up here, you walk in and there's like a billion signs of Sudeikis all over the sales room. And
that
then
is a really weird internal office
yeah,
promotion.
Yeah, there's several weekend folks that like to have big chats about the show during other shows.
My bad.
So Yeah, the hype train has kind of kept me away thus far, but I will watch it eventually.
I hope they do more with Coach Beard, by the way, next season. I really like his character.
Yeah, I like him as a character, but I am really worn out on the relationship with him and that weird chick. I think that's they're driving that one into the ground.
Yeah, more on the soccer side and who he is. And you know, he does a lot behind
reading
the
of,
scenes.
And inverting the pyramid.
Lasso. He does a lot to help Lasso and that doesn't take credit for it. It's like the opposite of Nate.
Yeah, see? I agree with you on that. Yeah. I'm getting my Roy Kent jersey here in a few weeks. I'm excited about that. All right. Thank you, Jacob, for your tickers. Thank you, Travis, for filling in for Sam. Josh, you're awesome. P1s, we love and adore you. Get stuck in and win your 50s.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Park, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM, Dallas-Fort Worth. KTCK FM, Flower Mound. A Cumulus Media Station.